This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
Pitch Talk with Olivia Cox and Rachel Daly.
Good afternoon, happy Tuesday, and welcome to Pitch Talk with me, Olivia Cox, and Rachel Downey.
Yay!
Rachel's looking very, very happy and summery in the studio today, so I'm really excited to tell you all that this weather is apparently going to stay for the weekend, so lots of lovely summer stuff. But Rachel, I think we've got some breaking news as well as our regular headlines.
Yes, we have. We are going to start the show with the sad news that former Aston Villa and Bolton defender J. Loy Samuel has died in a car crash in Cheshire. The 37-year-old, who most recently was player manager of non-league side Egerton, died this morning. He made 199 appearances for Villa after signing with the club in 98, and he played 83 times for Bolton between 2007 and 2011. All we know so far is that the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association have confirmed that he collided with an oncoming vehicle this morning. We've also heard from the Championship side Villa on Twitter, who have said that they are deeply saddened to hear of the death of our former player J. Loy Samuel at the age of just 37 in a car accident. If we get any more news in about that, we will let you know. We'll go back to you, Olivia, with the headlines for today.
Thank you. Super sad. So many condolences to friends, family and everyone involved. In other news, though, in tennis, Serena Williams can win the French Open, even though she came back too early after giving birth. This is a quote from her coach, Patrick Mouratoglou, and it's all to do with whether or not she will be playing on the clay. So, of course, we've got Wimbledon coming up at the end of June and into July. I think it's a slightly punchy statement from her coach to say that she came back too early. She is, of course, a 23-time Grand Slam champion, but she has not played a game on clay since reaching the final at the Roland Garros in 2016.
Do you think she did come back too soon? Do you think sometimes when you are that much of an athlete that maybe you think you know yourself and you think you know your body, but when you go through something like childbirth, it takes more out of you perhaps than what she realised?
I mean, if we're going to go on the standards of Kate Middleton, then I'd say that 6 months is quite a long time before you go back to work. I don't think it's too soon. I think perhaps it's a good reason to give if you're off your form. Mm-hmm. I think obviously your body has gone through a huge change, but I don't think there's any set time, and I think there are an awful lot of women who will go back to work within 6 months of childbirth. Mm. Why should a tennis player be any different?
Because of the pressures on the body, you know, it's not just going to work and maybe the commitment and the hours of work.
But she is an athlete, so would her body not bounce back?
Yeah,
more?
That's very, very true. Muscle.
To be honest, I'm playing devil's advocate. I'm completely divided on this one. I just think maybe from her coach, it's a bit of a funny thing to say.
And also, yeah, from her coach, it shows a weakness.
It shows that they're looking for an excuse.
Ooh,
yeah. Nasty. But of course, she did withdraw from tournaments in Madrid and Rome this month, which cast doubt over her participation at the French Open. But that begins on the 27th of May, so that's pretty soon. And that will be her big comeback, we're thinking. And of course, her coach is saying that she is working extremely hard and improving in all the areas very fast. So, I mean, that's a nice generic statement, and we wouldn't really expect anything else from a coach.
Yeah, at the end of the day, she is a 23-time Grand Slam champion. So I think
just
she'll
a couple.
Be. Yeah, one or two more
she'll
than
be fine.
Me. It's fine.
In F1, Mercedes driver Lewis Hamilton has said that his dominant Spanish Grand Prix victory had revitalised him after a difficult start to the season. Now, interestingly, I read an article today in the Evening Standard which said that Lewis has been having some personal doubts. And in fact, this win at the Spanish Grand Prix has basically alleviated all of them. But he's the last person, perhaps with the exception of Max Verstappen, that I would have expected to have personal doubts.
I don't know whether this is, you know, Hamilton coming of age.
Do you think?
It does happen. You know, Jenson Button back in the day was incredibly arrogant. I don't know whether now Hamilton's beginning to grow up. I don't believe it at all. He is, it's very, to have someone, a British person, say they don't like Lewis Hamilton, is you get scowled at. But I don't.
I don't know. I think he's a bit like Marmite.
Love hate him, but I do not like Lewis Hamilton whatsoever, and I do think a lot of his greatness is down to the car, perhaps, and not him. But also, Mercedes bosses want to restart Lewis Hamilton's £120 million contract now that they are winning again. Hamilton claimed since Feb he's close to signing the £40 million a year deal, although speculation is rising over the length of the agreement, which could run for 3 years. I still think we're going to see Hamilton teamed up with someone very, very good. I think I still like Ricciardo to come
over. I knew
over.
You were going to say
Mercedes.
That.
I'd like that.
You know, I actually,
it won't be Verstappen.
I saw that Chris Horner was saying that, because obviously Max Verstappen has come under quite a lot of flack recently, and he was harping back to when he had Vettel on his team, and he was saying that actually a young Vettel was pretty hot-headed, and he was going through some of the same issues mm-hmm. that he's going through now with Max Verstappen, which does make me wonder whether this is just a rite of passage for these drivers. And
drivers are hot-headed. They are a different breed.
It's eyes on the prize, isn't it? And red mist and a very testosterone fueled sport. So, okay, yeah, maybe this is the good time for Lewis. Maybe he's gonna.
I like to see things
have a pinch of humility,
shaken up a little bit. For next season.
And of course, you mentioned Daniel Ricciardo, the Australian. Yep. Has admitted that he struggled to handle his new look Red Bull car. So it's the first race in this new car. And he finished fifth in the Spanish Grand Prix, which is quite a fall from grace for him. Mm. I think he'll come back.
Yeah,
I don't,
of course he will.
I don't think there's a massive issue there.
It's an exciting start to the F1 season, though.
It is.
We do. This is what we were talking about at the before it started, that you don't want it to be obvious. You don't want to be predictable. F1 has lost its racing passion because it's been so predictable, and they've been tearing their hair out about it. So this is good. It's like a rebirth
and
of the sport.
Even seconds after the starting, Romain Grosjean, again, actually, he had another incident back in Baku, and he now has a 17-point... Oh, no, sorry. Hamilton had a 17-point... So Grosjean is now under huge investigation because he had a massive error. Did you see that spin?
No, I didn't actually.
So it was, I think it was on the third turn, and it was literally seconds in, and he just, it seemed like he just lost control. And this is, I think, maybe three races after his last big crash, and that was under a safety car. So there's something not quite working there.
Do you think the pressures are getting to him?
Possibly.
Yeah, and can't blame the car for things like that.
Yeah, he's obviously not going to be the most popular one on the pit lane now that he actually wiped out three cars. So,
yeah, he really can't.
You know, sharing's caring.
I doubt we'll be seeing him next season then, if that's the case.
Nah.
We are both right. Is it done? Easy.
Ruthless.
Boom.
Shall we get in touch with the teams and let them know?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, rugby. Just a couple of weeks after slamming English rugby as a pathetic sport, James Haskell has been signed to Northampton Saints. Now, this is after 12 seasons with Wasps, and his contract came to an end. And we last week spoke about this, and we actually said that we smelt a bit of bitterness, and it kind of feels like we might have been right.
Yeah, and also Danny Cipriani has signed a new
He's
team
going to
as
Gloucester,
well.
Isn't he?
He is, and it says here as well that it has boosted their World Cup hope, because basically they look to be heading abroad if they can't obviously find a English team. And now,
isn't the rules if they're not playing club rugby? You can't be selected for England.
Yeah.
So I think
they would have gone over to France.
Yeah, there was a feeling of scrambling to be signed by a club. And it really did for a while look as if James might be leaving altogether. So the England flanker would have not been picked again for a squad.
Something about James Haskell.
He rubs people up the wrong way.
Yeah, there's something about someone liking the sound of their own voice.
Something about someone who calls his bread and butter money-making machine pathetic.
It's incredibly unappreciative. It really is. And now look at them. You know, then they'll get back in the World Cup and say that they were misquoted. I don't think they were. I think he knows exactly what he was saying.
Don't say we were misquoted.
Yeah.
We didn't say it first, James. You said it first.
I'm just backing it up.
And that's all my headlines for today. What have you got, Rachel?
I love it. I'm just backing it up, James, because you're going to be listening. You're going to be tweeting.
Obviously,
do tweet
he
us,
will be
though,
listening
James.
Live. If yeah, let us know.
At FUBA Radio. That would be our tweet, obviously, because we are on FUBA. Right, so my stories, I'm going to start with the cricket. I don't know what I've just done with it, but I'll just say it. So basically, 100 ball competition plans because young people are not attracted to cricket. Young people are just not attracted to cricket anymore. The competition is being proposed, according to the England and Wales Cricket Board Chairman Colin Graves. Do you think? Well, what? Why is cricket? I've got my reasons why I think cricket's not that popular
right,
anymore.
My feelings about cricket are that they're great, or it is great, on a Sunday morning when you watch the highlights, when you're a little hungover and you've got a massive bowl of cereal and nothing else to do. However, to watch a game in real time is long, and it's really complicated rules.
You could say the same
rules.
F1, surely.
Yes, but I think more. So I used to feel the same about F1 before I really got into it, mm-hmm. and now I appreciate the technicalities.
Yes.
And so much can change unless you have a race dominated by safety cars, or you have one car that goes out at the beginning and it's very safe. Mm-hmm. Things can change throughout. Whereas cricket, I mean, unless they're going to shove a bit of sandpaper down their pants, it's not all that exciting, is it?
No, it's not. And the thing is as well, I mean, I've said this, the reason why things like football are so popular, young kids, they grow up with their favourite footballer in posters on the wall, they're people that they idolise. We just don't have that with cricket. We don't have those big star names. We, you know, maybe need to bring it back into schools more. They need to do something. They need to rejuvenate it, definitely, for the younger audience.
Yeah, it's also a little bit sexist, or it certainly was when I was at school. I mean, the boys played cricket, and we played rounders.
Yeah.
And rounders...
Oh, sick note here.
Well, obviously Rachel didn't play
clearly
rounders.
Not.
Rounders, although it is great fun, it is like a dumbed-down version of cricket.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like, oh, they're there, you can't understand these complicated rules. Here, have a rounders
bat. Off you go, Precious.
Yeah. So I think if we can gender inequalities out, or maybe not specify to genders. I mean, why do girls play netball and boys play basketball? We all play hockey. Why can't we all play cricket?
I'm going to write to the head of schools and say, Olivia has sent. I might pen a letter. It's been many a year since I penned a letter, but I might do it this once.
A strongly worded letter.
I could do it.
I love a strongly worded letter.
I'll get my fountain pen out.
Don't. You'll smudge.
Yeah, really. British former Olympic champ Darren Campbell has said he is relieved to be alive after suffering a bleed in the brain. He was resuscitated and placed on a ventilator after being rushed to hospital last Tuesday following a seizure at home. Campbell won 400 metre relay gold at the 2004 Olympics, told the press that he nearly died. That is how close it was. It's only when you see the fear in your kids' eyes that you realise.
You know what? Do you remember, I think it was 2016, we had a real bad year for tragedies, and there was a meme going around, and it was like, someone find Madonna and lock her in a padded room because all our slightly older celebrities were dying. It's kind of happening to sports people now. Why is everyone suddenly having these awful, awful incidences?
I
know you can't answer that question, Rachel, don't worry.
For the first time, I'm a little bit lost for words.
I just think we all need to take care of ourselves.
A little bit more.
Yeah.
Fulham have put their place in the Championship playoff final at Wembley as they overturned a first leg deficit by beating Derby at Craven Cottage. It was so good. There was a pitch invasion last night. So good.
What?
Good old Fulham.
By who?
Good old Fulham. All the supporters who support, well, the home supporters, because it was at Craven Cottage.
So hang on, what defines a pitch invasion? More than one person, or can one person be a solo pitch invasion?
That's a crowd of people,
okay.
Basically.
So one person would be like a streaker.
If they were naked, yes.
Oh, right. Okay.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's, again, we'll have to talk about streakers. You got to see bits you don't want to see, babe. That's a streaker.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, one person would be someone invading the pitch. A pitch invasion would be the huge crowds that were there at Craven Cottage last night. Would be good to see Fulham make it back in the league again, in the Premier League. It would be good to see them go up. My father-in-law was at the game last night, and I hoped he had started the pitch invasion. But he didn't, Olivia.
Oh, I'd love it if that was happening.
Bitterly disappointed.
I was in Fulham the other day for Paola's Body Bar. I was there on a Friday night because mm-hmm. I'm that cool to do a workout at 6:30 on a Friday.
Oh, wow, good work.
And as I was walking back to Putney Station, I was inundated by what was obviously sport fans because they were all wearing sport shirts and, you know, woolly scarves and what supporters wear. So that was I think that might have been Fulham Arsenal. Was there a Fulham Arsenal game recently? Are they even in the same league?
No.
Okay, fine.
It might be FA Cup. I'll check.
Okay, fine. Well, it was definitely Fulham, and that's my story.
That was a good story.
Thanks.
Though.
Oh,
I was there till the end.
We've just had we've had confirmation. A pitch invasion is when an individual or a crowd. Okay, see, Rachel, I was right.
See,
well,
so
I
that's
wasn't
good.
Right per se, but neither were you. Of people watching a sport event run onto the playing area to celebrate or protest an incident. So did this happen mid-game?
They were celebrating at the end.
After? Okay,
yeah.
So that's
it's
a bit
great to see Fulham hopefully go back up again. It really, really would be good to see them. We shall wait and see. Joe Hart's World Cup dream is over after the former England number one was told yesterday he would not be going to Russia. The keeper was given the crushing news in a face-to-face meeting with Three Lions chief Gareth Southgate. Kind of obvious Joe Hart wasn't going to go. It really is. We've got Jack Butland, favourites now to go over there. And all the World Cup buzz, we were chatting a little bit before the show started. We were talking more about the World Cup
later.
It's not
long to go, is it?
No, we've got a couple of weeks.
Nice.
Yeah, and then throughout it will be my birthday. Nothing to do with
just
World Cup.
Just saying.
Just putting it out there. All right.
And a little bit of news that I forgot to mention, and I'd like your opinion on, Rachel. Horse racing.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need more uniform security? I'm hoping that everyone knows what I'm talking about when I say Ascot and Goodwood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was only a couple
with Goodwood.
Fighting broke out at Ascot on Saturday, a week after police said around 50 people were involved in multiple altercations.
That's crazy.
At Goodwood. It's awful.
That's not the image you have for horse racing.
I know. There just seems to be such a big drinking culture at horse racing.
That's what it is. That's what
I think it's
to.
The. Yeah, the reality is that horse racing, people don't go to watch the horses, really. And they celebrate or they commiserate, and both mm-hmm. involve vast quantities of drinking. And I think, we need to be a bit more sporting about this.
Yeah, I think... I think just slow down with the drinking, clearly. You have to... No, but that's what causes
wise
the fight.
Words, indeed, yes.
Yeah, so I think... Oh, I've got to be quite careful with what I say, because I'm going to think about how to word what I say. But, yeah, I think you need to change it to be from, like, an all-day drinking session.
Yeah, there needs to be some sort
which
of...
Which is what it is for a lot of the time.
I really don't know, because it's strange, because when you have other all-day events, for example, Wimbledon, you don't get that. So why is that? Is it just more policed? Is it more prestigious?
Because I think with Wimbledon, it's not... You go, you sit down. Yes, you've got the social aspect in between the matches, but you sit down, it's more, whereas with horse racing it is like a festival kind of feel. I think that's maybe the difference.
I see what you mean, like a sport festival rather
yes
than a music
it
festival.
Is
and I guess the drinks are probably more expensive at Wimbledon.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's not a kind of everyone down it, it's more of a festival feel with horse racing.
Perhaps
for sure.
You're allowed to bring your own alcohol into racetracks. Maybe that's
no,
where they're going wrong.
I doubt it.
I know you do bag searches.
Yeah,
anyway, we digress
very quickly. The value of London is to gambling firms including 888, Paddy Power and William Hill has surged by more than £1.5 billion after the US Supreme Court struck down a nationwide ban on sports betting that has stood for 26 years.
Wow.
So there we go. We can start sports betting. It's legalised now in the United States.
Can I ask a question?
Go for it.
Ticket touts.
Mm-hmm.
How come they exist? And how come the police don't stop them when it's illegal to do so?
That's a very, very good question.
Because every time you walk past a big event, you'll hear tickets by sale, tickets by or sale. How do they know I'm not an... I mean, maybe it's obvious about
me. It's not, though, illegal. You can resell your tickets.
Really?
Can you?
I thought ticket touting was against the rules.
Or with games. Do you know what? We literally could be here for the next hour.
A little
we
bit
do
of
apologize.
A tumbleweed.
Actually, no, I think it is. I think it is illegal, but, of course, you can get. It's easy to get away with it because there's just so many people. It's very difficult to kind of... You need more police for things like that, wouldn't you?
True. I think the answer to all my questions far today is get more police.
Easy. I feel tired. Get more police, Rach. Get more police.
We have got some really great guests coming up in the show. We will first of all be talking to a nutritional scientist and Steph at Toral Shah in the studio, and then we've got Esme Gunnar in the studio.
Yeah, and it is Mental Health Awareness Week this week, and we will be touching on the topic of mental health with all our guests coming to the studio, and we're also going to be playing out stories from athletes about their challenges with mental health. So I think, and you know what, very, very quickly, I know I've got to be quit, but I've got a few facts about mental health I just wanted to read. Do you know that suicide is the biggest single killer of men under 45 in the UK? Mm. One in four people in the UK also experience a mental health problem. In England, one in six people will experience a common mental health problem, such as depression and anxiety. We will be talking about this, like I said, throughout the show, but here is The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, on depression.
I found that with depression, one of the most important things you could realize is that you're not alone. You're not the first to go through it. You're not going to be the last to go through it. And oftentimes it happens. You feel like you're alone and you feel like it's only you and you're in your bubble. And I wish I had someone at that time who could just pull me aside and, hey, it's going to be okay. It'll be okay. So I wish I knew that. Just got to remember. Hold on to that fundamental quality of faith. Have faith that on the other side of your pain is something good. After about a month and a half of staying in that little apartment and cleaning, I got a phone call from the head coach of the team who cut me, the head coach of the Calgary Stampeders. He called me and he said, hey, I know we cut you, but I'd like you to come back. I said, okay, I appreciate that, coach. Thank you very much. I'll think about it. And he said, okay, great. I hung up the phone, and my dad said, you're going to do it, right? I said, no, I don't think so. I think I'm done with that. And he goes, what? I said, my gut tells me I'm done. He said, what are you going to do? I took a deep breath. I said, I'd like to get into the business. He said, what business? I said, the wrestling business. He says, you are throwing it all away. It is the worst mistake you will ever make. He said, you're ruining your career. I said, maybe I'll be no good. But I feel like in my heart, I have to do this. And I either need you to train me or need you to not train me. My dad rose to the occasion. Said, I'll train you. And it wound up being one of the greatest chapters in my life.
Pitch Talk with Olivia Cox and Rachel Daniel.
Yeah, welcome back. Yeah, welcome back. How did I say that, man? This is Pitch Talk with me, Rachel Downey. We've got the lovely Olivia Cox that has been called a savage by our producer, Abby.
Apparently, I was very opinionated.
I like that.
On.
I like it as well.
I'm sorry if I caused any offence, but I quite like it.
Yeah, never cause offence. Never, never, never. Aww. We've got our first guest in the studio, nutritional scientist and chef, Toral Shah. Did I pronounce that correct?
You did, yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's so lovely to have you here. It really, really is. And we were reading lots about you earlier on. First of all, nutritional scientist.
Yes.
Explain what
so,
that is.
So, I guess I try and differentiate myself from nutritionist because it's not a protected term. And I went to medical school and I've got a master's in nutritional medicine. So, it's very evidence-based science, not like, woo, I'm making this up, basically.
Which you must see a lot of, because we have a lot of people actually coming into the studio that talk about the same thing, that they get very annoyed by fad diets, like, you know.
Or even people who will endorse something without really knowing whether or not they know what they're talking about. Because as someone who is held in high esteem within the nutritional world, you obviously have quite an important role in telling us what to do. You need to be quite certain that you're telling us the right things.
Absolutely. And also, I back things up with evidence-based science. I don't just say, oh, I think this and believe this. I might say I believe something, but I'll say that's my opinion and I don't know what the science is behind it. Or I'll say there's this science which leads to this, but I won't necessarily just say, oh, I like that, so that's what I'm going to do. Or be endorsed by a brand just because they're paying me loads of money. It's very much evidence-based.
You do have your own brand, though, don't you? Tell us about the Urban Kitchen.
So the Urban Kitchen's been around for about 14 years now, and it's a food and nutrition consultancy now. It's evolved from so many different things, but it's always been around food and nutrition. It's been a healthy meal delivery company. It's been more of a cooking school. But at the moment, I really focus on helping brands, food and health brands, ensure that they are using the science and they're just making up marketing rubbish, basically. And also, I still see patients and clients as well. So I really look at how do I help optimize their health? How do we have the most healthy lives we possibly can, but have fun and have a really great time and help prevent disease?
So this is again, probably like how long's a piece of string, but what is the most common problem question that you get asked by people when it comes to food and how they feel? Is it to do, say, with, I don't know, bloating or people not being able to lose weight, or what is the most common?
So I probably get asked a lot about whether they should cut things out of their diet because they're getting bloated or irritable bowel or whatever, it was because their own belief system, something, there's nothing actually wrong with them. And my actual whole answer to that is don't cut things out unless you're really allergic to it or even shown to be allergic to it, which when they talk about food sensitivity tests, there's no such thing apart from, you know, actual allergies. So don't buy them on the internet. And my whole ethos is about adding things into your diet, having a much, much wider variety of foods, including fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and kind of eating the Mediterranean way. So
hang on, does that mean that you think intolerances don't exist?
No, intolerances do exist, but you can't, there aren't tests there out there which measure them.
Right. So it's more trial and error.
Yeah, you know your own body, but then everyone's like, for myself, I'm not allergic to some things, but I know they're hugely, hugely, hugely intolerant to prawns, mussels and clams, and it will go in and out very quickly, like in the midst of minutes, so I don't eat them. And that's not because I don't like them.
That is a wise choice.
It's a wise choice. Yeah.
I would endorse
it's not
that
sexy.
Choice.
I won't be offering you prawns.
No, please don't. It's in and out. So, like, you know for yourself, but they're not because I don't think they're good foods and stuff like that. It's just that they just don't work with my body, and, you know, and then I'm really ill for 2 days, so I don't want to do that. But other things, unless, I mean, and also a lot of people, their body's not working optimally because their gut health's really bad, so that's why they can't tolerate some foods too, and they're also so used to cutting loads of foods out that their body can't deal with them either. So,
well, it's interesting that you mentioned gut health, because of course everyone recently is saying, maybe you can correct me, that your gut is very linked to your emotions.
Not just that, it's basically there is a complete gut to mental health brain axis. So it might be actually, there's so much research that needs to be done yet, but how our psychology is, our moods, our immune system, 90% of our immune system's in our gut. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
No, yeah. I didn't.
Yeah, there you go.
So hang on, that means that if you eat the wrong kind of things, you could be more or less susceptible to colds?
Well,
or is that where the whole good bacteria thing comes in?
Yeah, exactly. It's a good bacteria basically working against bad bacteria. But yeah, actually, what you can eat can affect how your mental health, how you're feeling, depression. Like, there's a whole, you know, load of research that's taking place at the moment that's talking about if you have poor gut health, it's actually linked to depression and anxiety and things like that, which is, I think, really interesting.
Why? Explain a little bit more. Why is that? Why does something that you put into your body affect you? Like, I know that when you eat rubbish food, like takeaway stuff, you feel very, oh my God, I just feel... Is that a little bit?
Well, you understand that we work with our beneficial bacteria, the good bacteria, and they actually metabolise a lot of what we eat and make all kinds of things like signalling molecules, things that make us feel happy, you know, things that talk to other bits of our body, all sorts of things. So if we're not feeding our gut the right thing, then obviously there are lots of things that might not be made. So we may not be able to actually create those molecules which tell our brain, oh, this is what we're doing. But if you think about it, just going back a step, our gut instinct, you know when something doesn't feel right. When you're walking down the street, you know there's someone weird walking the outside. So where does that come from? There's loads of science missing. We don't know enough yet about the link between mental health and depression and gut health. And there is lots of new studies that are taking place at the moment.
Is there a certain food, this might sound a very stupid question, that's a happy food? Are there certain things that if we eat would lift us?
Well, things like turkey and stuff would help, you know, full of tryptophan. You know, they'll help to make serotonin and stuff like that. I mean, there's always things, isn't foods that make us feel good also release dopamine? That's the pleasure center in our brain.
So that's
sugar,
things like chocolate.
Yeah, all sorts of things. So there's two different schools of thought. One is that it makes you feel better, and the other one, it just releases all these amazing drugs in your brain. Yeah. So, well, signaling molecules, really. So, yeah.
So obviously we've covered mental health. What about physical health? Because you have attributed quite a lot of health and recovery to your diet.
Yeah, so I had breast cancer when I was 29, and most young women sadly get very, very aggressive breast cancer. A, it's also diagnosed quite late because people don't assume young people are going to have breast cancer. Secondly, it's often quite aggressive because it's very hormone dependent or something dependent, and it grows quite quickly and spreads quite quickly. My tumour grew quite big, but it didn't spread. And one of the things that myself and my doctors at the Royal Marsden talk about is that I must have been doing the right thing in some ways, because I'm genetically predisposed to breast cancer, but it didn't spread throughout my body. So what was I doing? I've never smoked. I've always eaten loads of fruit and vegetables. I do drink, but, you know, a little bit. I've never eaten loads of processed food, sugar, you know, that kind of thing. I've just had a very kind of basic Mediterranean-type diet. And that is, has been shown to be protective of cancer. I can't prove anything. My doctors can't prove anything. I don't have a identical twin where, you know, we could do experiments on. And it's not ethical anyway. But, you know, there's definitely something about it. And I, you know, I haven't had any recurrence, touch wood. So on Friday, it was 12 years since I was diagnosed.
Oh, amazing.
So I'm really lucky. And lots incredible. Of, sadly, a lot of the women I've met through the journey, whether they've been friends or through the cancer journey, you know, and sadly 50% of those who are diagnosed before 40 still die.
Yeah, well, one of my best friends actually has breast cancer, and we were looking into like ways, she's had a mastectomy, and of the best ways for her. And I know we're not kind of saying on the show that if you have cancer, this is how you should eat, but people, and you hear about it for healthy eating as well, so, you know, maybe I'll err a little bit more to like just healthy eating. They say like the raw plant-based diet, eat as raw as possible, that's the best. Is that
no, it's not true, it's bollocks.
That's
it's
good
complete
to hear.
Bollocks.
Okay.
Eating more vegetables is great. Eating more vegetables for any, even, you know, whatever you call yourself, a paleo, omnivore, or vegan, just anyone that encourages you to eat more vegetables, amazing. That's one of the only few proven things that the more vegetables you eat, the more it's protective because of the antioxidants and the phytochemicals and the phytonutrients against any cancer, and also other diseases like heart disease and stuff. But there's nothing about raw. It's all the problem is there's too many people who had the cancer experience and they've done something and they think that's made a difference, but actually a lot of the time it's luck, it's the treatment you've had, it's all sorts of other things.
It's very hard to pinpoint an actual causation. What about though microwaves?
Microwaves are perfectly safe. There's nothing.
See, I get so many conflicting things. Some people say it completely changes the molecular structure of the food and therefore you're not getting what you need.
Those people, though? Just then, what are their qualifications and do they have a chemistry or physics background?
I think you're quite right. But there are a lot of people who are classed as nutritionists who you wouldn't necessarily say, well, let me see your certificates first.
Well, yes, that's sad. That is the problem. That's why I call myself a nutritional scientist and I'm always happy to share what my actual qualifications are. And I think that's sadly the world we live in, that if you look good, people are likely to listen to it. It's called the halo effect in psychology, and sadly that's not, doesn't mean you know anything at all, which is a real problem because people are listening to people just because they're celebrities or whatever and they don't have the nutrition to back them up. It's actually quite dangerous, and there are people that could potentially die by following some of these fad diets or even, you know, getting upset by microwaves and things like that.
So microwaving your food has no negative effects,
not that we know of at the moment.
Wow.
That doesn't mean in the future we might find something.
This
but
is
we don't
brilliant.
Have
this is
going
to save
right
so much
now.
Time in
literally,
the morning.
Yeah.
But I don't
yeah.
necessarily cook things in the microwave. I mean, no. I personally use it to reheat stuff, but I don't necessarily cook things in the microwave.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, well, it makes it that the texture's not as nice.
Yeah, I guess it's. Yeah,
you. But it heats it from the inside, the water,
but
and
it's
outside.
Not zapping it of its nutrients.
No.
Okay.
Sometimes it's actually quicker.
Well, yeah.
I'm learning a lot.
I know, I'm enjoying this.
What about sugars and mental health? Let's talk
about sugars and mental health. So, again, like, do we really know? There's so many stories going on. It's as addictive as cocaine and, you know, all this stuff. And, yeah, that sugar has been related to increasing the risk of lots and lots of diseases. I think for me, I like to look at kind of what's the evidence. And when we look at mental health, as we have been for Mental Health Awareness Week, my favourite studies are some that have been done in prisons. So obviously it's not ethical for us to remove food groups from normal people wandering around. But in some prisons, there's some...
they do that in prisons?
No,
they
did some experiments just to test it out, basically.
That's so bad.
No. They didn't, actually, because there was such a high rate of depression, suicide, people attacking each other and things like that. There's been a research by Tamam and Gesh where they started to have the tuck shops be regulated, have them allowed to buy less. Others, they could basically, they would have these cycles of depression and stuff, sleep throughout the day, the meals would be over, then they'd go to tuck shop, buy loads of like sugary and crisps and stuff, and then have that sort of sugar high, stay awake till late, and then go to bed, miss the meals again. So they did an experiment to to do that, and it basically cut down like depression by like 70-80%. It cut down the amount of suicides by literally 95%. It cut down, you know, the whole violent attacks on each other and the prison staff by a vast amount. So that's
by cutting down or taking out their diet completely, sugar.
Taking out the diet, not completely, because you can't do, because there's lots of natural sugars, but like shutting that tuck shop, so controlling a little bit more about their food, and then giving them supplements as well.
So again, it goes back to the healthy eating, and I suppose as well, if people are, you know, going to bed really late, your body just completely gets out of sync.
Well, basically, you have these hormones called leptin and ghrelin, and they sleep is so important. So if you haven't slept, then you won't have kind of renewed your ghrelin, and you'll just be really hungry in the morning. And leptin is the same thing. So it's these hormones are all in very fine balance with our natural rhythms, our circadian rhythms, sleeping. There's a reason why we sleep, other than, you know, it makes us feel better. But there's so many reasons why our body needs actual sleep. And this whole thing, you know, which was about, you know, sleep is for the weak or only sleep 4 or 5 hours. Yeah. It's not great. It's not good for your overall health. And there's so many studies which show that if you sleep less than 7 hours, you're more likely to increase your risk of, you know, all cancers, heart disease, all kinds of things.
So what's your thoughts on fasting then?
That's a really interesting question. Do you mean intermittent fasting?
Well, I'm mainly thinking about, well, at the moment there's been some press around Ramadan and how Muslim athletes can continue to work around that, and maybe saying people who have slept better tend to need to eat less, or maybe they go to bed earlier. But I suppose intermittent fasting as well as a dietary way could be another.
I think with Ramadan it's really difficult because it's all very much based on when the when it's daylight. So at this time of year it's actually really tough because it gets light at, I think, what, 4:35? I'm never awake then, so I don't know. But and it gets dark. You know, yesterday I was looking, I was like, at least 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
So the times of actually eating and fueling yourself are quite low. So in other countries like Dubai and stuff, where they literally turn their kind of lives upside down, where everything happens, your office work, all work is done at nighttime and everything else is asleep during the day, that kind of works, that's fine.
Yeah.
Here, it's much harder because we have these longer
summer nights. There, they're not really fasting. They're just switching when they're going to go to sleep.
Yeah, and they probably have a shorter time frame which they can eat as well. And obviously in fasting they don't drink water, and I think, you know, I totally understand why people do it for religious reasons. And you know, there's so many religions which fast, like so many. If you even think about Lent, it's a type of fasting, you know, think of Buddhism, it's a type of fasting. But I think from a scientific perspective there's a couple of things. If you look at the Okinawans, which are is a Japanese island where they eat a really traditional diet, they talk about eating till they're 80% full. So that's a type of fasting, because they're not eating till they're full. And they live, you have more centenarians than almost anywhere else in the world. If you look at experiments with animals, and like obviously we haven't done it with people, but when they've eaten 80%, they live longer, their telomeres are longer. So there is something to do with fasting. Yeah. I have to say, there's so much conflicting evidence, there's so many research papers. It just needs a lot more research to be done. But I think for some people, maybe that works, and some people it doesn't. I think as far as being tired and eating from boredom, obviously it kind of cuts that out because you can only eat at certain times. So it's a restriction, isn't it?
Yeah, I could probably do it without not eating when I'm bored. Toral Shah, thank you so much for joining us today. We could talk to you for longer, for sure.
I know,
so
I think we've all been hurriedly making notes, and we had so many questions from the team. Ask her about this, ask her about that. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Yeah,
thank you so much. And the next clip I'm just going to play you, as it is Mental Health Awareness, is from Dame Kelly Holmes, talking about her struggles with depression during her career.
I think when I was an athlete, it was all about achieving the ultimate dream. For me, it was to be Olympic champion since I was 14. And so an element of that is obviously to have a strength of character, a confidence around you, and an ability to perform at your best when you're against the world's best.
Yeah.
And I think back then, if you showed any sort of
Weakness,
let's say.
Vulnerability.
Yeah, then almost your opposition have got one over on you already.
Do you think that state, as you call it, came about because of injury? Because all athletes, when you know, the Olympics is obviously your goal. That's what most athletes will be aiming for. And you seem to be injured more than others. Do you think because you were training so hard and trying so hard, and yet there were obstacles put in your path, do you think that was what set you off?
Just the pressure in my head, I think, of hating the fact I was injured again. You know, I just couldn't believe it. I was on this roller coaster.
Was it
ride.
You that you hated, or your body? Because at this, you've been quoted as saying that you self-harmed every day during this time. Was that almost a way of taking it out on your body for letting you down.
Yeah, I think, you know, people would take it out on alcohol, drugs, sex, whatever it is. Yeah. And unfortunately, suicide. And for me, it was self-harming was, it's a horrible word, but like almost a release. But it was, I could, you know, I just, the pain that I was always getting, but the pain was like the mental pain, you know, the stress.
Did you talk to anybody about it? I mean, no one in your family or good friends? Or did anyone not notice that you had
scars? I used to hide it with makeup, and then you do it in places where people aren't going to see. I mean, you know, because it's, look, I never thought that I would ever get in that state. And when it actually happened to me at my worst, I was looking in the mirror. I was in such a state, you know, I was putting on the water just to drown my tears because I was just like in this black hole. Yeah. You know, it's almost like it's a cloud or fog. You can't see anything. You know, I was kind of thinking every day.
It's so important that somebody whose whole persona is as strong as you are talk like this for young people, that they know that it's that what they're going through is not...
I'm just a human being like everybody else that had a talent and strive to do it, and everybody else in life are just trying to get through life and be the best they can be. So we just need help sometimes.
There you go. That was Kelly Holmes on her struggle with mental health, as this is Mental Health Awareness Week. Well, in the studio now, we've got Esme Gummer, a personal trainer, motivational speaker and head instructor at One Rebel Gym. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Quite a tongue twister for me then, my big horse-like teeth. How are you this fine day?
Very good. The sun is shining.
It makes
even though
feel
I've
good.
Been indoors all day.
I see. It's all right.
Underground.
We'll just make you feel a little bit more brighter here. Now, I asked before we went live if you guys know each other, because Olivia, you've worked at One Rebel before, is that right?
I have. So One Rebel has been around, how long has it been around? What, five?
About three and a half years now.
Really? So well, it's a baby. And it's in the city and it's very wonderful, and they do these awesome classes that are kind of get in, sweat till you can't sweat anymore and get out. But it's a different kind of feel to fitness, because I think you've described it as more of a like immersive experience, haven't you?
Yeah, I suppose we don't just do like the fitness there. We have like the lights and the sound, and the music is quite overwhelming and the lighting is quite over the top. So I think people compare it to like a nightclub sort of theme.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That'd get me going out for sure.
It's very motivational. So, I mean, where is that all going? Because we've had HIIT was a really big thing. This year, everyone's talking about HIS. And then we've got all these rays popping up. Yeah, it's more steady state rather than the intervals. Where do you think One Rebel will go next with their workouts?
I think they'll definitely keep it as it is. They definitely evolve with what's going on in the fitness industry, and I think that's what's really good about them, is they're not sort of like stubborn, like this is right, we're going to stick to our ways.
Yeah.
So they'll definitely evolve with what's going on, but the product that they do, they know it works, and they know that the customers love it and keep coming back. So I think they'll keep it as it is, but you know, evolve with what's going on outside.
Now, you are a former cheerleader, and you were told...
Who told you that?
All over the internet.
Now, you were told that you'd never walk again after a botched hernia operation.
Yeah.
And it says here, when you came round, you had no short-term memory, and you couldn't move from the waist down.
Yeah.
What was that moment like? Someone very active, then all of a sudden... You can't remember, you can't feel. What was that?
It was mad, really, because I was only 18 years old, and I'd just turned 18 by a month, which actually determined which ward I was on. If it had been a month earlier, I would have been on a children's ward. So because I was on the adults ward, my mum couldn't stay or my dad couldn't stay. So at 9 o'clock every night, they had to go home because visiting hours were over. So I think I got a completely different experience with it than what I would have got if I was a child.
Yeah.
And I just sort of turned 18, so it was a time in my life where I was ready to go to dance college. I'd auditioned, got into dance college, and I was ready to move on to the next stage of my life. So it literally changed my life.
Wow.
But I suppose it would change your life at any age, but I wonder how differently I would have dealt with it as a child or now.
Yes.
Well, that's really interesting, because that sort of links back to what we've been talking about earlier, mental health, because, of course, it is Mental Health Awareness Week.
Do you think that it was partly your psychology and the way that you were approaching it, being on this adult ward, probably surrounded by people that you weren't used to being surrounded by? Do you think that helped your recovery?
100%. Like, I, as a child, I was actually quite babyish as well, and I relied on my mum and my sister a lot to sort of be there for me. Like, I wouldn't even go upstairs on my own. Like, I'd be like, can you come upstairs with me?
Yeah.
And my sister would bully me, like, get up there on your own. But it definitely made me see life differently. And, you know, when you're on your own in those moments, it's sort of like those anxious feelings that we all sort of get. You can sort of stand up, shake it off, breathe, walk away. When you're paralyzed, if you get anxiety and you're lying there in a bed, you can't get up and shake it off. So it was actually dealing with the sort of mental side effects of it in a bed still. I couldn't get up and shake it off or walk it off or go and walk around.
So you're you're almost stuck with your thoughts and you have
completely.
To meet them face on, because a lot of people will repress experiences.
100%.
And this is where things like post-traumatic stress disorder come through. And it's quite often someone who's been involved in a big accident, or they've seen an accident, or they've had some sort of life experience.
Yeah.
And this sticks with them. Do you think that's why you've gone into personal training? Is it a desire to help other people
for
cope?
Sure. I think like a lot of my... like rehabilitation was through exercise, and it was incredible to see what exercise can do, because I didn't just learn to walk again. Like, I had to learn to jump, I had to learn to take both feet off the floor. Like, when you do that as a child, no one teaches you to jump, you just do it.
So I had to stand a lot closer to the floor when you're a child.
Sure. And like, you don't even know you're jumping or doing it. So even learning to jump again was crazy.
How long did it take?
I mean, this question gets asked quite a lot, like, oh, how long did it take to get better? I mean, it took the best part of a year to be normal, but what's normal, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
And, you know, I don't think I ever officially went back to what I was before I got paralysed, as in the sense of dancing, because I never really explored it again to that extent, because I was dancing every day of the week, you know. So I suppose I'm not better in a sense if you compare to what I was.
Why didn't you go back into dance?
I just... I went back to like baby's ballet, and like I was happy to sort of do that and join in, but it was quite crushing.
Yeah,
like,
I agree. I
was going up on my toes and like shaking, and like these kids were just prancing around the room, and it was quite destroying. So I sort of was like, I love fitness. I found fitness. I want to help other people, like you said, help other people find fitness and find, you know, the mental strength through fitness. And it just ended up that I took that path. It wasn't, I won't ever dance again. I just ended up taking a new path.
Things I was saying then, yeah, I and again, obviously, I don't know at all what it's like to be paralysed, but for me, I used to be a dancer, and it's very hard when you know how good you used to be to then go back and you're not.
And I think that's the hardest thing, was comparing, and it was like, that's one thing that took me a long time to do. I was, again, I was only 18, and, you know, I was very jealous, and I resented my friends who were all going off to dance college, and I found that very difficult to deal with, resentment and jealousy. And, I mean, I'm glad for it now, because I've learned so much about it, but I found that bit the hardest, was the comparison to who I used to be.
And of course, that is a big problem, and we are increasingly finding our young people struck down by mental health deficiencies or anxieties. And it's this big social media culture that means that everything is competitive, everything is out there for the taking. What are your thoughts on the whole Fitspo fitness Instagrammers?
I think like the best advice I could ever give to people is like, stay in your lane. And one of the biggest things I've ever learned is, don't compare your chapter 1 to someone else's chapter 15. It's so easy.
That's,
and
so
I,
well said.
I really like that.
But I do it so much. Like, I look at someone maybe in my profession or maybe in my like adult life and be like, they're having a baby or getting married, or they're, you know, they've got thousands of clients, or, and I think, yeah, but where have they got, what have they done to get there? You know, and
it's the journey, not the destination.
100%. And that's something that I've learned, and I try and, you know, give out to other people. And when I speak, and when I speak in my classes, I'm not always talking about like, squat lower so you get a great bum. I'm like, you know, hold that squat, so, you know, strong mind, strong body, strong life, you know.
So it's almost the strength and the health, and then the aesthetic second.
Yeah, for sure.
So refreshing.
Yeah.
But of course, we do all want to look good, and athleisure is a huge trend. And actually, one of the trends that we've spotted here at FUBAR is that makeup is almost following that athleisure trend.
Yeah.
And there are brands coming through, or there are products coming through, that actually are functional as well as working for you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for me, you've got to remember as well, fitness instructing is my job. So like, the same way that people go to their jobs and want to look nice, like, I can't, like,
sweaty mess.
Yeah, like, if I was just going to a fitness class, right, I'd just roll out of bed, like, chuck my hair up, like, and just roll into the class, right? And when
story
I teach,
of my life.
Standard messy barn, done. But like, I'm teaching, like, it's my job, so I need to be presentable as well. Mm. So, like, finding, like, makeup and things to wear that don't affect me in a bad way. Like, there's nothing worse than sweating makeup into your eye and then going blind. Oh. And actually, like, looking out of the class, like,
it's
I'm like, blind.
It's that sting, isn't
Twitch.
It?
Oh, my God. Yeah. But I've been teaching, like, ride classes and I'm blind. Like, literally. And I just have to say it, like, I've gone blind. Just keep going. I hope you keep going.
Keep pedaling. Keep pedaling.
So what is in your gym kit that we could possibly steal?
So,
well, not steal, but go and buy our own.
Let's go steal. I'll steal. Time and me.
So, there's a really good one of the hardest things I found was foundation, because you want coverage, but you've seen the look, right? When people like sweat off their foundation and get the streaks. Yeah.
So beautiful.
Yeah, and you walk out of class and you're like, have I got streaks to any random customer? Like, am I okay?
But they're like, no, mate, you're all right.
But then you look in the mirror and you're so not all right. Yeah. And you're like, thanks.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's a foundation called Oxygenetics. I don't know if you've heard of it. And it's actually made by doctors from Beverly Hills. So the reason I like this foundation is because it's been thought about. And you can work out in it. And they actually recommend that you can sleep in it because the stuff in it is so good for your skin.
Oh, my God, it's ideal for me.
Oh, so it's like out. It's almost like skincare, but with a bit of coverage.
Yeah, it's amazing because even though you still want to take it off, if you sleep in it, the stuff that's in there will absorb into your skin. So it's actually good to sleep in a foundation, which is madness. But it really works. For me, obviously, it's light when you're working out in it. It stays on. Mm-hmm. It gives you like a nice glow.
Yeah.
So, Oxygenetics is something I really recommend. The Kardashians love it as well, and I'm basically a Kardashian. So, you know.
I mean, clearly, yeah.
Just keeping it real.
Just having a quick look on their Instagram, and it is actually loved by dermatologists. It's not just fitness people and celebrities, but it's a really regular product. I think that's what's really cool about it, because it's not just something really niche. It's like something you just slot in your handbag.
For sure.
And I think coming back to this mental health awareness, a lot of people are quite scathing about, oh, you shouldn't wear jewellery to the gym, you shouldn't wear makeup to the gym. Frankly, if it makes you feel good,
wear
it.
Yeah. And it was funny you say that, because I went into training the gym today and someone turned around to me and was like, a PT was like, oh, you got hoops in. I forgot I had my hoops in. He's like, all right, hoops in the gym. And I was like, yeah, and what?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I forgot to take them out, but I owned it.
If David Beckham can shave his head and do different sporting haircuts and be famed for it, then why can't
we wear my hoops in the gym?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think you're allowed.
I like the comparison, you and Beckham, then it was good.
Yeah,
was
that good. Felt really
same
right.
Wavelength.
Yeah.
That was just so
it felt really natural. It really, really did. I think that's what we've got time for, annoyingly, with you. I want to talk to you more.
I know. I'm blown away. Thank you so much for coming in.
And thanks for
your story.
No. I cheerlead myself. Like, go on, Esme, you've got this. Go, go.
That's what you need. Motivational speech every morning. Well, if you do want to check out us cheerleading, then we did join the NBA Sixers for a little dance.
How'd you get on doing that, babe?
It wasn't my sport.
Yeah.
Everyone's
the only time I've ever beaten Olivia at sport.
I know, and we don't speak of it.
Did you throw each other in the air?
That would be good.
No.
I would love to have
a flyer. You know, funnily enough, I did do cheerleading at uni.
Did you?
I could do that bit. I could be thrown. I just couldn't, like, the choreography bit.
Weren't your vibe?
7 big feet. No, what's the expression? 2 left feet. That's what I meant. Esme, 7 where can we find feet. You online if we want to be inspired and see your life cheerleading?
So, follow me for cheerleading on.
Will you cheer us?
So I'm on Instagram, Esme_LDN, and I've got a website as well, which is just esmegummer.com.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Esme Gummer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having
today.
Me.
Thank you.
And as it is Mental Health Awareness Week, we've got Liam McKenzie talking now. So enjoy. Back in a few moments. Let's talk about your battle with depression. With football, did you find that there is no one to talk to? Did you feel quite lost? Was that quite a troubled time? And I think it was, especially when you were playing for Charlton, you reached quite a low point.
So to sort of cut a long story short, is to come into towards the back end of my career as a footballer, it was more down to kind of like not being able to cope with the fact that I'm going to have to finish.
Yeah.
And because it was prematurely finishing, because I was suffering from a lot of injuries and just kind of not doing too well, because I guess when you get something taken away from you that you love and you've always loved doing, and you have no control of like just trying to make it okay, then you kind of have like psychological problems where it can, you know, affect any one of us, really.
It's your identity,
and
I suppose, as well.
Yeah, it's something that I've always loved and it's something that I've always done. So it just like it was getting taken away from me. I couldn't control the emotions, and And then obviously life circumstances and things off the field were happening and being affected. And I guess, like anything, it's just life circumstances changing all the time.
Did you find that you were able to get support from your club then? Or do you think that that's something that was really lacking when you were trying to reach out for help?
I mean, so here's the thing. When I was sort of back playing, which is going back a few years now. So we're going back to obviously the 95 to like, best part of like 2013, I think it was. I retired, or 2012.
Who's counting?
Just to be exact.
I love this fact check.
2012.
Rachel Downey, the Leon McKenzie geek.
Yeah, but it's good. So back then, no, there wasn't. No one really understood depression. If I was to come out at the time I was playing and sort of saying like, I'm actually really struggling about certain things that I'm going through mentally, I think there would have been an old school kind of format that would have come into place, like the whole saying of, oh look, come on, just get on with it, you're being weak. The whole Bravo Man thing.
So that kind of feeling of like, oh, just don't be sad and you'll be fine.
It's a sport that is it's a pressure game, like most sports are. But with football, it's quite it's quite tough. Just trying to just figure out, okay, look, let me just try and be strong here and just get on with it. And I think sometimes it just doesn't work. So back then when I was playing, there wasn't enough support. It's getting better.
It's still not there though, is
but
it?
But it's nowhere near where it needs to be, no.
There we go. That was Leon McKenzie, who was on the show back in November.
Was that November?
That's such a long time ago.
In fact, you're right, because that was just to give you a bit of validation. That was just after Leon and I had done the Movember challenge.
Oh, yeah.
With Breakpoint, the SAS Who Dares Wins.
Oh, God.
And that was really funny because I got on the train and they'd given us our train tickets and they were first class, which I thought was going to be really fancy. But turns out on one of those short trains, it basically means you just sit down. And I heard this, Olivia! And it was Leon. And I'd never met him, and it was so lovely. And he is such a genuine, open, friendly guy. And I think it's really great that our sports people can actually now start talking about mental health. And he has, of course, got his documentary, which I've seen clips of, and I've seen a lot of behind the scenes on social media. So we'll have to find out when that's going to be available. And he has also written a book, The Biggest Fight of His Life, I believe, is what it's called. I have a copy. I shall summarise.
I shall read
soon.
It this weekend, and I shall let you know.
I'm sure it's marvellous.
And do remember that all past episodes of Pitch Talk are available on foobarradio.com or via our free app. And you can always send us an email. I do like the idea of us getting a lovely long email about how wonderful we are. So email us, pitchtalk@foobarradio.com.
Me,
can you imagine that? Yeah.
So continuing with Mental Health Awareness Week 2018, there is a study out that suggests that lifting weights can reduce symptoms of depression. Now, I kind of think that all exercise is a good treatment for depression because it releases the endorphins. But apparently it's specific to strength training because it's so empowering and confidence building and satisfying.
It's very true.
You really can see the progress.
You do feel stronger and
you feel able. I think possibly you hold yourself a bit better when you've been strength training and you just and lift yourself, is that a word? And lift? I mean, this doesn't mean you need to go and pump iron, as it were. This can be any sort of resistance training. Swimming is a form of resistance training. TRX, anything.
But it's true, because we were just, you know, I've not worked out for a couple of days, and I have been feeling...
It makes you feel meh.
Yeah, it really, really does. And then the idea, and I know we've said this before... It's quite, you have to mentally force yourself then to go back into the gym. I stop myself so much, you can't do that, you're this or that, you look at the size of my house, blah, blah, blah. And it's all what I've worked up in my head. And then when you do it and you work out even for half an hour, I just feel so much more.
Well, this
lighter.
Is another thing that I think we need to work on as society, because our culture is very much, you must look good to go into a gym. And I know we briefly touched on it with Esme that the trainers, of course, have to look after their appearance. And I mean, when I passed my, just saying, PT course, one of the things that we were asked was, do you think it's important to be presentable? And of course, you're selling a brand. And especially as a PT, I mean, you wouldn't go to a dentist with bad teeth. So you wouldn't go to a PT who looks like they're not living a healthy,
that's very true,
wellness lifestyle.
Yeah.
But as gym goers, we shouldn't feel pressured to live up to that standard.
We shouldn't. And you know what? In the grand scheme of things, no one really pays you any attention whatsoever.
Except yourself.
Yes. And we think, oh my God, everyone's looking at us. Am I wearing the right things? You know, I've got love handles. I've got this. I've got that. No one is paying attention. Everyone is there for their own personal reason.
You know
reason.
What? Maybe that's why these gyms that are really dark with the really, really bright fluorescent strobe lights, maybe that's why they're successful, because you cannot see anyone.
Well, do you know what?
I might be onto something.
I think on that note, with the last probably 20 seconds, I don't think we should ruin it by saying any more, Olivia.
Ta-da!
That's genius!
Right, let's all go and go to the gym rather than getting drunk, yeah?
What are you doing this weekend for the wedding? For Meghan and Harry's wedding? I know, right?
I was going to go away because I just think it's all a bit much. But maybe I'll go for a run and see if I can spot some cool people around Green Park.
Yeah, I'm just going to wear a crown and go to Vicky Park. No lie.
Let's just get drunk.
There we go. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next Tuesday, 4 p.m. on Pitch Talk.
Bye.
This past hour, you've been listening to Pitch Talk with Rachel Downey and Olivia Cotts. To listen again, simply go to foobarradio.com or our app, where this episode and all past episodes are free to stream or download. Send all questions, comments or queries to pitch@foobarradio.com or tweet @foobarradio.